This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hello, Falcoholics. What is up? Welcome to another episode of the Dirty Birds and Brews podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin, joined once again by my friend Daniel Flick. He is at by Daniel Flick on the Twitters, a top contributor over at Sports Illustrated's Falcon Report. Daniel, welcome back to the program. How are you doing?
Kevin, I'm having a great day, man. I appreciate you, as always, for having me on. As we were kind of saying off air, I think it's probably a brand new record for me, probably about a month or so since my last appearance, about the shortest time that I've had. So hopefully I'm, you know, sliding my way up the order. I've long kind of held that, pinch hitter role, if you will. Yep. So I guess now I'm in more of a primary positioning, or at least in the early portion of July when there's not a whole lot going on. So,
right. I mean, it's like you've worked your way into the starting five on the offensive line now. You know, this isn't the offensive line episode, but if it was, that would have been a great analogy. But, either way, you're definitely in the core rotation now, working your way up the depth chart. So appreciate you coming on for, like you said, this deep dead zone program here as we are getting through our roster preview. We started things off last week with our newest contributor at the Falcoholic, Jamil Johnson, talking about quarterbacks and running backs. Today, we're getting to the next groups on offense, two of the most interesting ones this season in wide receivers and tight ends, which especially at tight end, a lot of interesting questions, you know, obviously surrounding Kyle Pitts and whether he can kind of bounce back and really be that guy that we've been kind of wanting to see since his rookie year. And of course, a wide receiver, a lot of new faces, a lot of higher expectations on that group than in years past. Hopefully, we'll actually get to see that group utilized more. Arthur Smith, not necessarily the biggest fan of wide receivers. I think the Rams offense that we're probably inheriting, much bigger fan of wide receivers in general. So that should lead to some good things there. But we're going to dive into all that, guys, as you know. Before we do, real quick, I want to bring you a word from today's sponsor, BetOnline. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this summer. We've got baseball going. We've got golf. We've got soccer, all the way up to the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing, including every stat, every matchup, and live odds on just about every game that's being played. And when the game's over, you can head over to BetOnline's new online casino. Get in on a game of online blackjack or poker. Unwind with one of our over 150 online slots games over there. You know, I know hockey over with that dramatic finish. Basketball pretty much in the rearview mirror, but we got lots of summer sports coming your way until football gets started here real soon. So what are you waiting for, folks? Head on over to that website, BetOnline, today to get in on the action. Just make sure to use our promo code BELIEVE when you sign up. It's BLEAV for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right, Daniel, let's dive in. Let's start with the receivers just because it's a big headline group. People always got takes on wide receivers. Fantasy players love wide receivers. You know, the Falcons have been kind of quiet in the wide receiver department, other than Drake London, who's kind of the lead guy. But, you know, even just starting with Drake London, who's obviously the top guy in the depth chart, I mean, expectations are sky high for London this year. He's been the most consistent pass catcher on the offense sort of in general since he's kind of come to Atlanta. What are your expectations for London? Do you think he can really seize the moment and become that true number one wide receiver that we all sort of have hoped that he would be?
Yeah, this feels to me like the year that he breaks 1,000 yards. I want to say at about like 860 as a rookie and about like 904, I want to say last year. So, like, I mean, he's been very close. I do think this is a year that he really makes that leap. And again, it's a, he mentioned it at OTAs about trying to be this more well-rounded receiver. For him, he felt that that next step is kind of reaching that point where he can like actually take over a game. And there were times last year where he did that. There were times, I want to say against Washington and against Tampa. I want to say he had 125 yards against Washington, 175 against Tampa Bay. That, you know, he proved he could be that guy, and he's had flashes of being that guy. It's just, you know, I think a lot of it with him, the environment he's been put into is not, was not exactly well suited for receiver production. Not only Arthur Smith's offense, but again, pretty subpar QB play, and also a receivers coach who played quarterback, which, again, not exactly an uncommon situation. But when you start looking at 2024, you get Ike Hilliard, who, again, played, I want to say, well over 10 years in the NFL, has what he calls an in-helmet perspective. That kind of changes and shifts the type of conversations that you can have. And London has spoken very highly of Hilliard so far throughout the summer. He's looked really good in camp. I thought he looked great last year in camp too. And again, he had a pretty good year. It's just not, was not exactly the situation he needed for that, you know, elite level wide receiver one production. But, you know, talent wise and the role that I think he'll be used in outside and with a QB now who, again, very precise. And again, I don't think he'll be afraid to throw some of those red zone jump balls that a lot of people have been clamoring for years either. And so I think it's a really good combination. I think for London, who's not really known as this elite level separator, to have a quarterback who's really precise, you know, that's an important aspect of it too. But again, I think London, the flashes he's shown the last few years, very encouraging. The offense he's in this year, the room around him, the talent around him, there's a very good chance I think he ends up at least at about 1,100 yards this year.
Yeah, I think that would be the hope, you know, and I know the way he's being drafted in fantasy, people seem to think it could be even more than that. I think he's, you know, around like wide receiver 10 in fantasy drafts right now. I think there's a lot of belief that he could be one of the most productive wide receivers in the NFL because Kirk Cousins is known for just peppering his number one receiver with those targets. So it's not shocking to see that. I mean, I think we should expect over 1,000 yards, assuming he stays healthy. Like, this is definitely a situation where he should be featured heavily and should get a ton of targets and has a quarterback now that should be expected to hit him on those targets most of the time. And that'll be helpful for his projection. And I'm really excited to see how London sort of continues to grow in the NFL. And now with, you know, an accurate quarterback, we can finally get some more looks like that. But I'm definitely looking forward to that. And Kirk Cousins is just a big part of this whole situation, right? Like, seeing Kirk Cousins and the things that he does, he's just such a veteran, right? He knows what he's doing. Kirk Cousins is going to play within the structure of the offense. He's going to get the ball out on time. He's going to stand in the pocket and deliver. He's not going to get happy feet and bail. You know, he's going to get targets to the receivers, whereas some of these quarterbacks would either take off and run. And in the case of Marcus Mariota, a lot of the times that was a positive play when he would start running. But with Kirk, it's going to be receiving focus. Like, he's not a dual threat. He's not going to take off and run. And that's going to lead to good things for the wide receivers and tight ends in particular. You know, the bigger question is, like, what happens after Drake London? And obviously Kyle Pitts is going to be involved. We're going to talk about him a lot when we get to tight ends. He's going to be the main focus, obviously, of that group. But we also brought in a number of other receivers. We've got a lot of guys on the roster from last year still in terms of, like, depth players. But I think a lot of the focus obviously goes to Darnell Mooney because the Falcons paid him a ton of money. He's got that track record of producing. He was even basically a number one receiver for the Bears at one point. It's been a while since he's hit that level again, but still a very young player. And a very interesting guy, but I'm curious what you've seen from him at training camp, and do you think he's going to be a top three target on this team when it's all said and done?
I do, yeah. He, you know, from what I've seen, I want to say I actually said this the last time I was on the pod as well, that, you know, when Atlanta would have their, like, special teams drills and whatnot on one field, on the far side of the other field in this corner, you'd have a group of, like, Cousins, Zach Robinson, Yates, you know, so it was pretty much Cousins throwing to London, Pitts, and then Mooney. And to me, that feels very indicative of where Mooney is, where he kind of ranks in that, you know, hierarchy in that room. And I do think that, you know, from what I've seen so far, he's very smooth, very athletic, very nuanced route runner, very wiry, I would say. You know, I made the body type comparison to Jordan Addison because I think height, weight, speed-wise are very similar, route nuance-wise very similar. And Addison, obviously, a very, very big target last year for Cousins in Minnesota. But I think with Mooney, you know, the one thing that they've said a lot about him too, high character, yes, very versatile, yes, but he can make plays. Like he is the type of guy that they want the ball in his hands and they feel like he can make something happen. And you know, that number two spot at receiver has long been kind of lacking a presence like that. Especially with London, you know, he has not had a guy like that. I think, you know, from the moment he was drafted, it was, well, you have London and Pitts and, you know, that's about all you have. And then last year you have Robinson in there as well, but there was never a clear number two. And it felt like Arthur Smith was frequently trying to find players with certain types of skill sets who could maybe fill, you know, like a complementary role around London instead of having a legitimate number two who actually has that skill set as well. And so for me, looking at, you know, that receiver room the last few years, it felt like they needed somebody who could actually stretch the field, somebody who could, you know, hit explosives, and really be a playmaker. Mooney is that. And again, you know, as you mentioned, he was a number one in Chicago. I want to say he had like 130 targets or something crazy like that in 2021. Like in that offseason after 2021, he was like a legit guy. And I feel like a lot of people forget about how high of a trajectory he was headed to. And then, you know, had some things happen in Chicago that maybe set him back a little bit, whether it be scheme or QB play or, you know, whatever else it may have been. But I do think that he has the talent, he's got the skill set, and he's in the role to where I think he should end up being a top three target and a legitimate impact player for Atlanta.
Yeah, and we certainly hope for that, given that, you know, they paid him a lot of money. And I know a lot of people were kind of surprised with the contract, but they really did need a number two receiver. And given the team's, you know, given the hindsight of knowing this team was going to plan to take a quarterback at eight, they couldn't release. It was a lot harder to squeeze a wide receiver in while still reinforcing the defense in the places that they wanted to. So, you know, in hindsight, it makes a little bit more sense that they were like, okay, we're going to pay for this number two receiver right now because look, Drake's on a rookie contract. Kyle Pitts is on a rookie contract. We're not paying any other wide receivers. We can pay our number two above market value to get the guy we want in here. It's not really going to hurt us at this stage. And then hopefully by the time we got to pay London and Pitts that, you know, they'll move on for Mooney then likely and get a younger guy. But at that point, you'll have two established guys, hopefully, in Drake and Pitts that you don't need the veteran number two anymore. So interested to see how that plays out. But one thing I'm curious about is a lot of people think that Mooney's like just a Z flanker that's going to just take the top off. He's just like a better Scotty Miller in some people's eyes. But I think the role is probably going to be more for Mooney. I don't think they paid him $13 million to just be Scotty Miller plus plus. So have you seen any like signs of that so far at camp in terms of the routes type of stuff that he's running? I mean, we haven't seen a ton, obviously, but
yeah, he's done everything. And you know, it's funny you mentioned like that Z flanker role. At the owners meeting, I want to say it was Raheem, when I asked him about Mooney, he mentioned as an X receiver. Like he is a guy that they don't just see him as like a Z. They feel like he can actually play in a lot of spots for them. And they you know, so far in OTAs and minicamp, they moved him around a lot. They moved everybody around a lot, but he was running a very, you know, wide, expansive route tree. It wasn't just vertical concepts. He's not just a field stretcher. Like he is being, you know, utilized as a, he is being utilized everywhere. He is being viewed as a legitimate number two receiver. He's a guy who, you know, I want to say the last minicamp session that was open for us caught a red zone touchdown in a very condensed, you know, setting from Cousins in the corner end zone. And it was a really nice catch and a good route and good throw. And it's like, he's not just out there to run deep. Like he can do that. But again, that's kind of what I was saying a minute ago. Like, he is the guy that they've long needed. He's a number two receiver who actually can, you know, run A, but B, a legitimate complementary option and has that skill set to where you can use him in so many ways. So he has not been limited so far in the value and the outreach of roles that he's been utilized in. And so I don't think there should be any concern of him just being this, you know, vertical presence thread, and he's all speed, because there's a lot more to him than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm excited to see how he is utilized, because I think everyone's expecting big things, and he's just like, you know, to throw in a fantasy nugget here, like, he's basically free in drafts, right? I mean, he's like wide receiver 53 or something like that. People seem to think that I think people think he's going to be a deep threat, which means best ball players, you're going to love him, right? But like, I think he's going to be more than that. I think he's going to be someone you can consistently start. I mean, maybe it's just as a flex play, but I mean, I think he's going to have fantasy utility most weeks. So I'm excited to see if that pans out as well. But, you know, the third receiver spot has been basically non-existent in this offense under Arthur Smith. The Falcons used three receivers at the lowest rate in the league. I think it was like less than 15% of snaps last year total. The Rams, on the other hand, used three receivers on 94.9% of all snaps last year. So complete change. We've talked about this before, from we're going to play 11 to no 11 at all. And this third receiver spot seems to be more or less completely wide open. Rondale Moore, I think a lot of people assume would be the favorite, but the team seems to really like Ray McLeod. And then we've seen rookie Casey Washington really sort of impressing. I know you've had a lot of nice things to say about him. So what's your take? Your very early take, obviously. Training camp has not started yet, folks, just for the record. But very early take, like, how do you sort of see that wide receiver battle at this very early stage?
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, Ray McLeod was the primary slot for them in OTAs. Now, there's kind of a few things that I think have maybe played a part in that, too. One, Rondale Moore missed a little bit of OTAs, kind of more that middle portion with, I want to say, a hamstring injury. I want to say he was out for about a week or two and then returned for the end of OTAs and all of in-camp minicamp. But even before, you know, that happened, it was still Ray as the primary one, with Rondale kind of he rotated in a little bit, but it wasn't. It was pretty clear that Ray was kind of the top guy in that individual race. The other part of it too, I think, is very important. Ray spent 2020 and 2021 with Ike Hilliard in Pittsburgh, and so that's a real connection. The other part of it as well, when Ray was coming out of Clemson, I want to say 2018 or so, he actually had a private workout with Atlanta. And Raheem Morris. And so there are a lot of connections there, to where like this staff has had a very innate understanding of Ray for a long time. And you know, they know him a lot more than they know Rondale. And so for the early portion of OTAs, minicamp, all that stuff, I think it made sense that he kind of had that edge there. And I also think he capitalized on it too. I mean, he was a very good player in OTAs, very reliable target. He did have a few drops, but I mean, you know, it's OTAs, right? And I do think has a lot of fans in there. I spoke with Ike Hilliard about him a few weeks ago, and Ike was very fond of him, and mentioned that, you know, he's got this reputation as being this really feared return specialist and all this, but you know, in Atlanta, he actually has a real shot here to, you know, prove what Ike has seen of him already as a receiver. And so there is real optimism there. I think with Rondale too, you know, he's been kind of used more of a playmaker. I don't want to say a gadget, but kind of a gadget type of piece so far. I feel like high motion, high slot presence. playmaker, very quick, very fast, very athletic. I think the other part of this equation too, they're still going to run, I think, a fair bit of 12 personnel. I had an article published early July about Zach Robinson talking about, you know, schemes and what they're, you know, running and all that. And he mentioned that, you know, there will be an uptick in 11 personnel. But when you have a guy who can block like Charlie Warner can block, and you have a guy like Kyle Pitts who can play, you know, pretty well out of that slot role, you can kind of mix and match personnel to where even though you're in, you know, 12 personnel, it's an 11 personnel look. And so I think you'll see a lot of 11 personnel looks, even if it's not actually 11 personnel, which may reduce that role of that, you know, slot receiver to where it's not as prominent. But I do think of the two there that are like mainly competing for it, Ray Ray's got the edge. I think Casey Washington so far has been fantastic. More of an outside player, has not really been used inside quite as much. I think he'll be a guy who will enter training camp squarely as like that number 5/6 receiver, with Hodge kind of in that mix as well. Very impressive. Again, I thought Washington rookie minicamp all the way through the end of mandatory minicamp, about that whole month stretch, very impressive. Has a lot of fans in there. And I do think that he'll end up not only making the roster, but has a chance to actually have a pretty solid rookie year. But yeah, as far as that slot role, I think right now it's pretty clearly you got McLeod at the top and then Moore pretty clearly below him. Again, as you mentioned, got a lot to still kind of shake out throughout training camp.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting to hear. And I know a lot of people sort of just assumed Rondale Moore would kind of run away with it given his pedigree. But yeah, I mean, with Ray Ray, he's definitely here to help out with returns. There's no doubt about that. But a capable receiver, mostly been relied on as a depth piece throughout his career. But, you know, we saw it like in the XFL with Kevontae Turpin, who's now with the Cowboys. You know, he carved out a role as an offensive weapon, not just a return specialist in the XFL. The Cowboys started to utilize him a bit more in that role as well. And that could be a path for Ray Ray McLeod. But yeah, I mean, the connection with Ike Hilliard makes a lot of sense. I think that's kind of an underrated coaching hire. You know, people always look at the Steelers and they're like, wow, these guys just keep pumping out receivers. That's crazy. Like this coaching step. But like now the Falcons have the Steelers wide receivers coach. And it's like, well, maybe the Falcons can now be that team that starts pumping out wide receivers, you know, getting him in the room. So I'm definitely interested to see how that develops there. In terms of the other receivers, there's obviously a ton of them. And we don't have to talk about all of them because that would take forever. But I know you mentioned Hodge. I sort of still think Hodge is going to be just stick around as the top special teams guy. You know, not returning, but covering. You know, he's just so good there. And we know he can play anywhere. Like, he can line up anywhere. He can do it all. Not necessarily a needle mover, but capable depth piece. There's a ton of other guys in there. I know fans are really interested in hearing about Isaiah Wooden, you know, just because he's just a spark plug, essentially, for the offense. But any takes on any of the rest of this wide receiver group at this stage?
You know, there weren't really any clear standouts from that undrafted, you know, core for me in OTAs and camp. And I think when you look at that group, I do think Isaiah Wooden's probably the most intriguing because of, you know, the absurdly quick 10-yard split time and just how fast he is. And very energetic young man as well. Just very exuberant. But, you know, I do think that it's that might be a tough spot for some of those, you know, undrafted guys to actually earn a role in, because I think you have a pretty clear quartet that's pretty cemented on there with London and then the three M's of Moore, Mooney, and McLeod. And then, again, I think Washington is looking pretty safe for a roster spot. And obviously Hodge, as you mentioned, fantastic special teams player. And so I think that kind of – I don't think they'd carry 7 receivers. I'd be very surprised, you know, potentially as like a practice squad promotion if they really needed something, but I don't think 7 would ever be a number they'd reach. So I kind of think that might be a tough spot. But I do think there's some intrigue there with Isaiah Wooden, at least like a long-term practice squad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. And it's like, especially like as like a guy they can develop potentially for returns as well. And it's funny, you know, he's like the opposite of like Wooden. Like, he's not at all like, it's funny that that's his name, because he's actually like super like, I don't know. He should be like, you know, Silly Putty or something instead. Like, it's just like, he's just all over the place. Like, he moves like, his tape is crazy. If you go watch it, it's just, wow. He moves so well. So it's not actually Wooden. That's just his name. But, you know, he's not that, he's not the, the giant, you know, skyscraper receiver that can't turn. Auden Tate shout out. But
yeah. Oh man,
that was for Ian Hartiz. Yeah, but
wow.
Yeah, the Auden Tate shout out. That was a fun couple days at training camp. But
that's a pull, man. Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that pretty much covers that wide receiver group. Definitely some new faces there. The tight end group is much smaller than we're used to seeing it under Arthur Smith. We're used to seeing, you know, 6 to 8 tight ends in camp here, but Falcons only got 5. They're probably only going to keep 3. Tucker Fisk obviously goes on IR, so he's going to miss the season. Sad to see that. I think he would have had potentially a chance to compete for one of these tight end spots. But right now, it's all about Kyle Pitts. And you said it. Like, whether you call him a tight end or a receiver, he's probably going to be one of the top 3 highest snap count players on in terms of the skill position guys. So he's going to be out there. And again, maybe that means that it's technically 12 personnel, but effectively 11 for all intents and purposes, because they're going to have him operating as a big slot, maybe doing some outside stuff from time to time. But, you know, Kyle Pitts' numbers, like, I've often said that I think he should play more outside, but the numbers don't lie. Like, from the slot, his numbers are much better. Like, he actually has elite metrics as a slot player. From outside, it's not great. Like, it's just not been great. And so maybe the slot is his best fit. Obviously, inline, he's capable as well, but the blocking duties of an inline tight end just kind of bog him down. Like, I would just rather not. Like, I would just rather have him just go run routes than to waste time with blocking. But I think blocking slot corners from the slot, he's going to be much more effective than trying to block defensive ends or linebackers. But, you know, we'll have to see how that ends up actually playing out. But, I mean, the videos have been very encouraging, seeing Kyle Pitts sort of out there running around. He's starting to look healthier. He's starting to look like his old self. What do you think about Kyle Pitts? And I mean, I don't think it's too bold to say he could be the number 2 target. I think he should be. But you know, how has that played out so far? Has he been an early favorite of Kirk Cousins, or is he still working his way back?
Yeah, you know, it's always felt right for me. Like, the whole Kirk Cousins, Kyle Pitts thing has always felt right. It starts with Kyle Pitts recruiting Kirk Cousins. You know, I don't want to have anything that would set off any Florio alarms, but I'm sure Florio is like already, you know, tweeting away with that. But again, it's pretty common knowledge, I feel like, now as well, because I want to say Kirk said this actually at his intro. Yeah. But yeah, so like Pitts came out and was like recruiting him, and like a few weeks before free agency even began, and that, you know, was kind of step one of like, I think Pitts understood what Cousins could, how Cousins could impact his career. And I think in turn, Cousins sees how Pitts can impact his own career. And so I think it's a natural relationship, right? And I think for Pitts, it's not a coincidence that his most productive and really the year that he was the guy that everybody, you know, expected him to actually be was when he had a veteran quarterback. And, you know, Raheem Morris said this, I want to say at the owners meetings a few months ago, that it's when you're a guy like Pitts and you've got a veteran quarterback, it's not exactly just like the track record. It's the fact that, you know, he has a spot that he wants you to be in, and he can tell you that, and you can be there. And there's just an extra layer of chemistry, an extra layer of you know, on-field understanding of one another that I think is really, you know, prevalent now that maybe wasn't the past few years. And I think with Pitts especially, he has looked really athletic. But the chemistry that him and Cousins have off the field is very apparent, but also on the field, they are in rhythm, on time. For two guys who've maybe been throwing passes to each other for two, you know, I would probably like the end of OTAs and minicamp about 2 months, very impressive. He looked really good. And I think it's a type of situation where it should be sustainable because of, again, that relationship you have of a safety blanket for a tight end who can also make plays, but that tight end is now also substantially more healthy. He talked a lot too about how mentally challenging last year was of just grinding throughout the week. And it didn't really affect him as much on Sundays, but you know, it's a long season, but if you're grinding through something and you're not, you know, 100%, and then you've got everybody talking about, oh, he's not performing. just really starts to weigh on you mentally. And so I think he's in probably about the best spot he's been in mentally and physically in about 2 years. And I think with the room that's around him, the QB that's around him, the offense he's in, it's really looking promising. I would say for a pretty strong 2024.
Yeah, and I know that's what everyone wants to hear. I think Kyle Pitts is, it's been frustrating, especially the last two seasons, because it's like you just don't understand how a team could prioritize him with a top five pick and then seemingly just like not understand the type of player they drafted. And some of that obviously had to do with Kyle Pitts' injury, but it seemed like the plan with Pitts was to just make him like a vertical threat, and it's like, sure, like he can do that, like he's faster than linebackers, but that's not always. Like if you watch him in college, like his movement skills are what really created problems. And yes, he can catch deep throws, like he's huge and he's really fast, so yes, of course he's good at that too, but those are low percentage targets. And like as we saw, when you have an inaccurate quarterback, not going to necessarily like throw any shade that people know who I'm talking about, you know multiple people that I'm talking about. Like there was Kyle Pitts led the NFL in like unrealized air yards like a season ago or whatever. So like it's just like he was open. He found ways to get open and he just couldn't get the ball. But like when you're playing that sort of low percentage game, it's so easy for you to just be not productive, quote unquote, because the ball doesn't find you. But in reality, Kyle Pitts is a complete tight end. Except that he's just not ever going to be a super impactful blocker. He can be, I think, a solid blocker if you put him in positions to be that player, like blocking slot corners or blocking safeties or probably handling linebackers is even something he's capable of doing, you know, or at least stalemating with. But like having him play in line and block, like, and trying to like make him do that like regularly, I think it's just a waste of his talents. This is not George Kittle. Like George Kittle is a great receiver and just a fantastic blocker. So like he's actually someone that's going to boost your offense when he's blocking. Kyle Pitts was just not boosting the offense when he was out there blocking. I just think that was misuse. So I think he's going to be featured this year. I think there's a lot of obviously incentive from the front office, like to pressure Ray Morris, like please use this guy we spent a top five pick on, for God's sake. But I think there's genuine like desire to do that from the coaching staff too. Like, and like, I'm not saying Arthur Smith didn't want to use Kyle Pitts. I think they had a role in mind for him and it just didn't work out the way they thought. I don't think they like went into the season being like, well, we're just not going to use Kyle Pitts that much. You know, that's not, but they're not stupid. It just didn't work out. But, I think they have a more coherent full role for him. They're going to ask him to block less, or if they do ask him to block, it'll be like the same people that Puka Nacua blocks. Like they're not, Puka Nacua is out there blocking from the slot sometimes, but he's not blocking defensive ends. He's blocking, you know, secondary players, which is perfectly fine. So I'm excited to see how that develops. I think we all have high expectations for Pitts, but I think, again, he's so young. Like it feels like people have sort of turned the page on Pitts. They're like, oh, well, he had two like mediocre seasons. Okay, he's a bust. Bye. It's like, he's like 23 years old. He's younger than Michael Penix. Like, he's like, he was like 20 when he came to the NFL. Like, it's like, this guy's like not even, he's only been drinking for like 2 years now. Like, I mean, it's like, if he even drinks, I don't know if he does. He's only had the opportunity to do so for a couple of years. So like legally. Yeah. But, his story's so far from over. I think this isn't a critical year for his story, but like, I think this is a year where we could really see things change for him and see the narrative start to turn around in a big way.
I agree. And you know, the other part of it too, I think is very interesting. And I want to, you know, kind of shine some light on this as well. I want to say it was the last week of OTA. Zach Robinson was asked a little bit about Pitts, you know, and the role that he'll have and how many targets he'll get. And, you know, I think it was really interesting hearing Zach say that he may finish a game with like six or seven receptions, and maybe only two of those will he actually end up being the primary read on those plays. But then the other four or five, he's like a second or third read. But now that you have a veteran quarterback who can actually process and who can really rip through reads and click through them to where now you have a player there under center who can find Pitts if he is, you know, again, not this primary read. And I think that's so important with this whole conversation too, because he may be featured. And I think, I'm sure a lot of Falcons fans were pretty tired of the Arthur Smith excuse of, well, it's not like we're not calling plays for him. You might be, but they're not getting the ball. And I think a lot of fans kind of grew very tired of that. And I think with, when you have a guy like Kirk Cousins now who understands, you know, how to maybe involve and incorporate those players a little bit more, to where also you don't have to seek out, you know, 10 targets for Pitts or for London. It can be, you know, perhaps you call, you know, 10 plays for them. Maybe they only see the the ball on 5 or 6 of those, but they end up with 10 receptions because on the other, you know, 3 or 4 of them, they were a second or third read, but you have a quarterback who can find you still. So I think that's a very important part of this, you know, equation. The other part of it too, I think Kevin Koger, Atlanta's new tight ends coach, I'm very fond of him. Very, very good individual. Ann Arbor's finest. It's really funny. Him, myself, and Rothstein all kind of probably have the same area code in our phone. But I think with Koger, you know, him and Zach Robinson have each said that they're trying to get Pitts. And Pitts actually is very interested in this as well, and becoming this more well-rounded, all-around player, to where, you know, he might not be asked to block as much, but he wants to evolve as a blocker. And I think Zach Robinson even says like hungry, actually, like trying to improve in that aspect. And he's substantially improved from where he was entering the league. But when the Falcons, if you're Atlanta and you have, you know, Charlie Warner and you have Ross Dwelly, who I'm sure will kind of, you know, I'm sure will peruse, you know, their, you know, expansive skill sets here. You know, I'm not trying to overstep anything, but they are, when you have guys like that who can block it at pretty high levels, you don't necessarily need Pitts to. And I think that was also Zach's point about running 11 personnel versus running 12, is when you have a Warner, you have a Ross Dwelly who can block, you don't really need Pitts in line as much. But again, overall, he is still trying to improve in that aspect to where maybe he can block a linebacker. You know, perhaps he can, you know, serve whatever role, and I'm sure he'll have a little bit of an inline role this year, but I'm not sure it'll be overly massive either with the guys who are in that room, who I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah. We'll definitely get to those guys very, very quickly, perhaps even by the time I'm done with my next point. But it's like Kyle Pitts is a Ferrari. He's always been a Ferrari. Yeah. And when you get a Ferrari to take it to the track, you know, you take it to the track to go take it out and do Ferrari things with it. Or maybe you take it downtown to flex, you know, that, and that's fine. You know, sometimes you just got to flex. If you have a Ferrari, I'm sure you want to flex it, cause I don't know why else you have one, but you don't drive your Ferrari to the grocery store. You don't drive your Ferrari, you know, down the country dirt road to go like pick up somebody, you know, like you don't take it off roading, you know, where it's going to get down and dirty in the mud. You know, you take your RAV4, you know, you take your nice, you know, excellent car, very highly rated, rugged, you know, maybe you get the plug-in hybrid, it's very efficient, you know, can do lots of things for you, you know, very well-rounded car. Your Ferrari is you don't want to take it down that dirt road, right? You don't want it to get down and dirty in the mud. But so use your Ferrari at the track. Let your Ferrari go out and do Ferrari things. Don't get it all dirty in the mud, you know. Let your RAV4 players, like we're going to talk about right now, Charlie Werner and Ross Dwelly, you know, very, very good tight ends. Obviously, Charlie Werner gets a sizable contract here in Atlanta. You know, I think he's clearly a part of their plans on offense. You don't give a number two tight end that kind of money if he's not going to play. So in some ways, that felt more like an Arthur Smith thing where they're like, wow, they're giving a number two tight end money. But, you know, I think we got to some of the point of that is because Kyle Pitts is basically going to be the slot receiver in 11 most of the time. So they do want an inline blocker. And Ross Dwelly is another guy we should talk about too in this group, but you know, Charlie Werner, obviously the bigger name because of how quickly he was brought in and the payday he ended up getting to come to Atlanta. What's your take on Charlie Werner so far? I mean, it seems like he's clearly going to be a part of the offense, you know, at least from the get-go.
Yeah. I'm going to start calling it 11.5 personnel. Cause that's kind of what it felt like. It doesn't feel right to call it 11 or to call it 12, but, when they're in that 12 personnel with the 11 personnel look, it's primarily, it has been Warner as that one tight end in line. Zach Robinson is very fond of Warner. Like even, you know, twice, I didn't even ask about Warner. He brought him up just completely, you know, out of the blue, just because like he is very fond of him. And you know, Atlanta considers him as this very high level blocker. It's funny. I was writing about him a few days ago, and it was like, his numbers are so, like, if you look at it and you look at the contract, you're like, what are they doing? But then you start kind of putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And as you said, you can kind of see the vision of, okay, hey, we're going to put, you know, Pitts outside a little bit more, put him in that slot a little bit more. You kind of need an inline tight end as well. That's when you get a guy like Werner, who I think could be actually end up playing a pretty heavy amount of snaps this year. Him and Ross Gwelly are actually very close friends. Ross got married last summer. Charlie was actually in the wedding. Like, they are very, very close friends. And so it's really cool that their skill sets are very similar. Their personalities are very different, which is interesting, but they're still really close, which is, I find to be very, very, very fascinating. But, they are the two, I think, you know, lead contenders for that spot behind Pitts. Again, kind of mentioned it earlier, they're probably going to end up with three tight ends on that roster. I feel pretty confident that it's going to end up being, you know, Pitts, Werner, Dwelly. I think John Fitzpatrick's kind of in that outside looking in tier entering training camp.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
The Falcons are just so fond of what Dwelly and what Werner bring as that RAV4 type, as you mentioned. You know, those really, well, you know, highly gritty players, as you and I kind of were speaking about off air with your trivia game. But they're very tough, hard-nosed, not exactly prominent figures in the passing game in San Francisco or so far in camp. But guys that should have a pretty firm role, pretty established role, and a pretty important role at that, as well as a true blocking tight end.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what they end up doing with those guys. But it does seem like Werner is obviously going to be the primary guy. He's had many good years as a run blocker last year, you know, over 200 run blocking snaps for the 49ers. Interesting that both of those guys are coming from the 49ers, Ross Dwelly too. It seemed like the room was maybe a little bit more open-ended before Ross Dwelly got there. At this point, it seems like Dwelly's likely to be the favorite. I mean, he's the veteran. He's got all the experience. You know, obviously John Fitzpatrick has a chance. He's huge. He's got good hands. Hasn't really made it on the field much for Atlanta, but he could be in the mix. But I feel like their blocking is in good hands with that group, and they'll figure it out. And obviously one of those guys is probably going to make the practice squad too. So, you know, and Werner as well, like he's a solid pass catcher, nothing like spectacular, but certainly capable of catching some stuff if needed, and can do the work there as needed. He can catch some dump offs, do that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, from other than, you know, Kyle Pitts, Charlie Werner and Ross Dwelly, you know, it's John Fitzpatrick and Austin Stogner, the UDFA, haven't really brought in much at the tight end position, which I think leads kind of to what you're saying, which is they feel pretty good about this room and it's mostly settled at this point. We kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree. I will say with Stogner, they call him, I want to say, sleep number or some kind of like mattress. Like it's in reference to his soft hands is what I've gathered from it. And you know, because of the relative low number of players in that room, he has, you know, worked with a lot of the, like when they have like warm-up periods for, QBs and everything, like he has, I'm pretty sure, caught passes from Kirk Cousins at times, just kind of like ripping through stuff. But, again, he's pretty safe with that, you know, last player in that order, I would say right now, but very good. Probably pretty strong practice squad candidate, I would say. Like a very strong. I'm excited to like hit up training camp again and learn where sleep number comes from, because he had that nickname like a week into camp. So there's obviously something. Like there's got to be some story to that. But I'm very confident that it stems more from soft hands, reliable pass catcher, and, you know, a type of player who, again, I think has already earned pretty quick respect from some pretty important people. Like Kirk Cousins is just out here running, or just, you know, he'll jog back up the field yelling, "Oh, sleep number, what are you doing?" You know, and it's just like, this guy's an undrafted tight end. And it's that caught my eye. Like, that was, for as little as the undrafted receivers caught my eye, Stogner actually caught my eye probably the most of any of the undrafted offensive players. So that was particularly interesting. But I do agree, though, that I think that room is pretty set with the trio that, you know, is there already with Pitts and Dwelly and Werner. And then you also have, you know, I'd say probably Fitzpatrick is more of that practice squad. Will he make it through waivers? Will he not? I would imagine he probably would. I think Stogner's a guy they would also like to keep, though, too.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. So definitely an interesting tight end room. More settled than it's been in years past. Less players in it than in the last couple of years, that's for sure. But I think it's still a strong group there. So excited to see how that shakes out. And yes, I'm sure getting to the bottom of the sleep number nickname, definitely one of your assignments at training camp.
As much as myself, as anybody, like, I'm just kind of curious, man. I mean, me and a few of the other reporters that were talking about trying to, you know, I wanted to ask somebody about it, and I just, like, I kept forgetting to. And then I got to, like, a few weeks ago, and I was driving back, and I was like, oh, guess we'll have to wait till training camp.
Yeah,
I know.
Well, that's wait great. That's the nuggets you won't get anywhere else, folks. Those little secret nugs there. But I believe we've covered these two groups in depth. Daniel, thank you so much for your contributions, for your intel from OTAs and all the off-season mini camps and such. Anything else you're working on, guys? He's at by Daniel Flick. He's over at Sports Illustrated's Falcon Report. Anything else working on in the meantime?
Yeah, actually kind of teased the Charlie Werner, Ross Dwelly wedding story. That'll be out relatively soon. It actually might already be up from the time that this ends up running. But that, and then also a pretty big story on Atlanta's receiver room remodel. So si.com/NFL/Falcons for your readings on receiver rooms, sleep numbers, tight end marriages, or tight ends attending marriages, things of that nature. It's early July. I'm still refreshing the brain. Come training camp, we'll be humming along well. Words will be flowing. We'll be all good.
Excellent, excellent. Good stuff there. Guys, make sure you check out everything Daniel's got going on over at Falcon Report. And, of course, I'm Kevin Knight at Falcon. Kevin, thanks for turning into Dirty Birds and Brews today. We'll be back later this week with our offensive line episode, and then we'll have the defense coming short after that. Some great guests. Please do like, subscribe if you haven't done so already. Leave us that 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. We will be firing up the Falcoholic Patron Fantasy Leagues once again, starting around training camp time, probably. You know, we usually get the drafts going after, like, the second preseason game, third preseason game, something like that. But you could join up and get more information on those leagues. Join the Patreon, join the YouTube channel members. All tiers get access to that stuff, so you can check that out. Thanks again for joining us here on Dirty Birds and Brews. We will see you guys real soon as we start to get closer and closer to training camp coming up at the end of this month. We're less than a month away now. It's almost there. So just gotta relax a little bit longer until the takes start flying here real soon. So thanks so much, guys, for joining us here. We will see you real soon. Have a great day, folks.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.